Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, why police join online hate groups and anti-government militias, and why those groups welcome law enforcement officers as members. We'll spend this hour with Will Carless of Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting, who cross-matched membership lists from two categories of Facebook pages, police groups and extremist groups, promoting anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, anti-Semitic, and racist ideologies. We'll talk about some of the memes, jokes, and hate speech allegedly generated by officers online, and about what happened when Reveal contacted the departments that employed officers active in radical organizations. Our conversation starts after a short break. Extremist militias love cops. Specifically, they love when police officers agree with their vitriolic views enough to join up. Think about it. If you're planning for a coming revolution, who better to have on your side than somebody with specialized tactical training, ready access to weapons, and advanced knowledge about how the rest of a police department might respond to militant violence? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Social media platforms have been a boon to individuals with interests that aren't widely shared in their own communities. And hate groups now can connect angry people across wide geographic distances, incite their fury, and in some cases, encourage them to act on their hatred in the real world. We count on law enforcement agencies to prevent these groups from actually hurting anyone. But it turns out police departments across the country may have extremist group members within their ranks. Will Carless is a journalist who covers extremism for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. He wrote his recent series To Protect and Slur with colleague Michael Corey. Will, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having me on.
Start us off by explaining how you confirmed the identities of police and correctional officers who belong to online hate groups.
So it's a long and technical and frankly quite boring story, so I'll give you the shortened version. Basically, we wrote software that was able to go into Facebook's API, which I don't really understand. We have a data team who helped us with that. Michael Corey, my colleague, was mainly involved in that. But essentially what we did was we went to Facebook and we said, we want the lists, we want the membership lists for all of the members of these specific groups. And we gave them two types of groups that we were interested in. We gave them a list of about 1,200 extremist groups that a researcher in North Carolina had you know identified over the last few years, and we gave them a list of police groups. So we got two long lists of names of people in Facebook. One group of which were in police groups, and one group of which were in one list was in extremist groups. We then basically put those into a database and drew a sort of a Venn diagram, and we identified a list of about 14,000 people who were in members of at least one extremist group and members of at least one police group. So that gave us a list of profiles that we knew were interesting, were possibly police officers who were in extremist groups. And the next thing we did was I basically spent months of my life looking at these people's Facebook profiles and looking for things like, you know, occasionally people do list, okay, I'm a police officer at, you know, Jonestown PD or whatever it is. But what I more often look for was photos of people in their police uniforms, people being tagged in sort of a police events and things like that. And I then, you know, spent a lot of time Googling and trying to figure out what department they were at. And then ultimately we would call the departments and confirm whether or not they had an officer by that name there. So it was a lot of, you know, kind of tedious and difficult work, but ultimately we were able to identify a bunch of police officers.
So groups can promote really disturbing ideas without defining themselves as promoting hate, right? As a political science professor told you, militia groups in particular see themselves as the good guys, patriots defending the Constitution. What criteria did you apply to defining an organization as extremist? I think you mentioned that someone else had identified these organizations. What criteria did they apply?
That's right. And you know, she could speak more to that. But we did sort of vet this very carefully. And we spent some time talking to this researcher about her methodology. Her name is Megan Squire. And she's a computer science professor in Elon University in North Carolina. Now, she has been very interested in Facebook for a long time. And she has a very sort of strict methodology that she goes by to identify these hate groups. So first of all, she uses well-defined lists lobbyists from places like the Anti-Defamation League and the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center. But then she also, because, you know, one of the tricky things about identifying hate groups today is it's not like, you know, the olden days where you had sort of basically the KKK and neo-Nazis, and people were sort of, it was very easy to define who a hateful group is. Today, and especially on social media, groups like the alt-right, that movement, are very careful about how they present themselves. So they use all these sort of in-words and dog whistles and sort of hiding behind these memes and sort of, you know, basically they camouflage themselves online. And what Megan's very good at is identifying those dog whistles, identifying those themes, and then going and finding those groups. So maybe let me illustrate that with an example. There's a group that I looked at that's called Rhodesia Bush Posting. Now, to most people on the street, that doesn't mean anything at all. But anyone who kind of studies hate and extremism looks at that and says, that's a huge red flag. Now, Rhodesia obviously being the former colony that's now Zimbabwe, that's a sort of a cause célèbre for white supremacists on the internet and in real life. Basically, they believe that Zimbabwe was a much better country under Rhodesia when it was run by, you know, by white oppressors, basically. And they see the fact that Zimbabwe is such an economic catastrophe is directly related to the fact that it's now run by non-white people. So that's a sort of a complicated dog whistle that unless you know about it, you're not going to see that. Megan Squire and ourselves, you know, we were able to identify groups like that in addition to the just sort of, you know, classic, obviously racist, obviously extremist groups that we found.
How did you join the groups that were private so that you could understand what it was that they were promoting online?
Yeah. So again, this was something we were extremely cautious and careful about. What we wanted to do, we didn't want people to come back and sort of say, you know, you snuck into these groups undercover and you know, you violated people's privacy. So what we did, once we'd identified groups that we knew that there were police officers inside, we simply joined using admittedly Facebook accounts that we created for this purpose because, you know, we didn't want our own private Facebook accounts to be polluted by joining these groups. But we created these groups in our own names. And then as we joined the groups, quite often these groups have most of them have administrators because they're closed groups. You have to apply to join and then they will decide whether they let you in. These administrators would pose specific questions. And some of those were quite tricky. But what we always did was we were always open and honest and frank. So, for example, if an administrator asks you, you know, do you think Islam should be banned in the United States? The way we would answer would be to say things like, I prefer to keep my political opinions to myself, or something like that, something benign. Mm-hmm. Now, as a result, we weren't allowed in to many, many, many of these groups, but a lot of them did let us in. And I'm now a member of several dozen of these hateful groups. So, but we were open, we were honest the entire way.
So when you join one, you get suggestions, like if you enjoy belonging to Rhodesia Bushmasters or whatever, you might also want to join the KKK's Facebook page?
Right. And I'll give you an example. So for example, one of our producers on the radio show, who's a young Muslim guy, he wanted to take a look at some of these groups. So he just started, you know, putting them into searches. He didn't even join them. He just searched for them on Facebook. He sent me an email a couple of days ago with a screenshot where Facebook has actually sent him an email saying, hey, I see you're interested in these awful Islamophobic groups. Would you like to join them? So I think that for me, more than anything else, illustrates how kind of broken the algorithm model is. And yeah, every time I log on to my Facebook that I created for this purpose, not only do I see all sorts of, you know, awful stuff that's pulling from these groups, but I'm also constantly being suggested to join new and ever more sort of hateful groups.
So specifically to the police officers, correctional officers, sheriff's deputies that you found who you were able to, you know, positively identify as belonging to these groups. Give us a sense of the kinds of exchanges they were participating online.
Yeah, so we found cops from all across the country. We identified about 400 who are members of these groups. And We were stymied somewhat because, first of all, we have to get into the groups, and that's the biggest hurdle. So a lot of the more interesting and, frankly, you know, more extreme groups just wouldn't let us in. So we couldn't see everything. But what we were able to see inside is, basically, you get into these groups, and I will say they run the gamut. You know, you have groups that are just openly hostile and openly racist, and then you have all of you have that, and then you have groups that are sort of, for example, Confederate groups, which people they bill themselves as being historical groups where, oh no, all we want to do is get together and, you know, talk about old uniforms and members of our family who are in the Confederacy. But then, you know, once you start actually looking at these posts and looking at the comments, you'll see people using, you know, racist terms, using, you know, saying really vile and racist things. You know, some of them, you just open them up and you just have flat out, you know, racist memes, racist jokes, racist videos. You know, I was looking at one the other day that has sort of like a YouTube video of a guy singing a song that's a kind of a version of Imagine by John Lennon, but he's saying, imagine there's no Muslims, and it's just a really vile song. But then you have other groups which, yeah, there's a lot of legitimate discussion going on, but then dig a little deeper and look at the comments and look at what people are saying, and, you know, it's sort of N-word this and N-word that, and we need to get rid of these people, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a very toxic, very nasty world that these police officers are involved in. And we did actually find some police officers who were, you know, who are posting nasty stuff themselves, both anti-Islam and anti, you know, anti-African-American stuff themselves as well.
So I'm going to admit flat out that to me this sounds like a stretch, but theoretically I can recognize that officers could engage with online hate groups and still do their jobs without acting on the beliefs those groups endorse. Were you able to find evidence that links participation in these groups with bad behavior at work at police and sheriff's departments and prisons?
Yeah, so let me be like very honest and frank here. I mean, what we originally saw this project as was like, it's one thing to know what people are doing on Facebook. It's one thing to kind of peek behind peek behind the curtain a little bit. But we did want to know that. We wanted to know, right, so if we can identify police officers who are in these groups, let's go and see what they're doing in real life and see, you know, whether this is translating to their policing, to answer your exact question. So we tried to do that. The problem is that when you ask police departments for any records of their officers' behavior, they just, in almost all cases, just won't tell you. Hmm. They won't give you disciplinary records. They won't tell you whether people have been involved. There are some public searches that you can do, but when you're dealing with hundreds of police officers, you know, basically what we did was we filed public records requests to like several dozen departments of the people we were most interested in, and almost all of them came back with, we're not going to tell you anything. So it's tricky. Now, in a few cases, we did find, because there are other public records, we were able to find evidence that this Facebook activity was indicative of other stuff that these people were doing. For example, a guy in Madison County, Mississippi, who's a member of a group called White Lives Matter, had also been involved in a lawsuit that's currently being brought by the ACLU that accuses his department of decades of systematic racism, setting up roadblocks. I mean, one of the things the ACLU claims is that this department had on its arrest reports already had filled in two words, black and male.
Wow.
And that's how the department operated. So this guy was a member of that department. He'd actually been deposed in the lawsuit. And in the deposition, he had admitted, you know, using racial slurs. He had admitted punching an African-American prisoner in the face while this guy's hands were handcuffed behind his back. So, you know, some evidence. But in the vast majority of cases, we wish that we'd just been able to sort of, you know, see the records and see what was going on, because we've got a red flag for these police officers. We just can't see what they're doing in real life.
My guest is journalist Will Carlos. He covers extremism from Reveal with the Center for Investigative Reporting. We're talking about his recent series, To Protect and Slur, about police officers who belong to anti-government militias and online hate groups. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, talking this hour with journalist Will Carlis of the Center for Investigative Reporting's Real News. His recent series, To Protect and Slur, is about police officers around the country who belong to online hate groups and anti-government militias. So, Will, you were telling us before the break that a lot of police department personnel policies put up sort of a barrier between journalists or members of the public and the personnel files of individual officers. But one sociologist that you interviewed did say he thought participating in these kind of hate groups online and the discussions that happen there will almost inevitably influence somebody's decision making. So in other words, officers who are radicalized are likely to act on those views, was his thought.
Yeah, and I think we should draw a distinction between the anti-government militia groups and the sort of the other types of hate groups. And the reason I think that that's important is that the anti-government, the militia groups, and we covered this in a separate story that I wrote, but the militia groups are particularly interesting, not just because of the way that they influence people, but people's thinking and their decision-making process, but also for the reasons you mentioned, touched on in your intro, which is that there are specific tactical and practical reasons why you don't want members of anti-government militia groups in your police departments. They can, you know, they can give intel and information to other militia members. They have ultimately, in most cases, pledged an oath to the organization that they're a member of outside the police department. So if they're called upon to investigate or to arrest members of their militia, then they're going to be, you know, they're going to be cautious about that or indeed just possibly not do it. But then as far as the hateful groups are concerned, you're right. I mean, this is long-standing sociology. I mean, if you immerse yourself in a sort of a hateful world where people are saying denigrating things about gay people, about people of color, about minorities, then there's a lot of evidence out there that you're going to go out and that's going to translate itself into how you behave in real life. It's also just common sense. Like, I've been inside these groups and they're like, I had to sit and do some deep breathing and kind of steel myself for it before I go in. Not because I'm some sort of, you know, lily-livered snowflake who's never seen anything bad, but just because they're not nice places to be. So I think you have to question why anyone would go ahead and join and interact with these worlds when, after all, there's a lot of stuff you can get involved in social media. Why go to these particular places?
I want to talk about a couple of these militia groups, the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters, for example. What is their beef with the authority of federal government specifically?
Basically, what these guys believe is that they grew out of conspiracy theories. I think that's the first thing we need to understand. Like, the militia movements absolutely intertwine with conspiracy theories. So you have a lot of people who are members of these groups who are also like doomsday preppers, who also believe that, you know, there's kind of a usually Jewish cabal which is running the world and that is seeking to enslave good old fashioned, you know, Americans, and that this is going to happen at any moment. I mean, there's a lot of bizarre and strange things that these people believe. And ultimately what both the Three Percenters and the Oath Keepers believe is that the Constitution is the only true law of the land, and that anything that comes kind of between, well, let me correct that. They believe that the ultimate authority in any particular area should be the local sheriff, and that basically between the sheriff and the Constitution, you know, nothing else is legitimate. So like state governments aren't legitimate, the federal government's not legitimate. The only people who should be in charge in a given piece of land are the local sheriff, and then failing that, the Constitution. That's sort of very simply what they believe. And if you start from that worldview, then you've got this this theory that anybody else, like between those two levels of power, is only interested in tyranny and in oppression of everyday folk. So it's very conspiracy driven, and I think it's very scary. I think we're going to see a lot more from these groups in coming years.
Help me understand, Will, how anybody could read the United States Constitution, which like explicitly lays out the structure of the federal government, and then infer that its defenders should not acknowledge federal authority.
I mean, you're talking to somebody who covers extremism, for a living, and I think that ultimately is at the core of all hate and extremism, is this ability to sort of block out the overwhelming evidence that you see around yourself in every day, and just focus on, some dumb conspiracy theory and believe that's really, the truth. I mean, that makes sense, right? I mean, if you really genuinely believe that, for example, skin color influences like the way that people are, despite all the knowledge that we have and all the experiences that you have day to day dealing with people of different races and religions and creeds, you have to put those blinkers on, right? You have to put that sort of mask of ignorance on in order to believe this stuff. And so that this is just one other type of that. It's just another way in which people are just ignoring the vast, overwhelming evidence against them and just focusing on one thing. I mean, usually I think it's because, in my experience, from talking to everybody from neo-Nazis to militia members to radical anti-fascists, I think one thing unites these people, and it's a belief in their own superiority. Like, I've figured this out and no one else has, or this very small group of people has figured this out and other people haven't, and we're right and everybody else is wrong. And it makes people feel important, and it makes them feel special, and it makes them feel like they've cracked the code, when in actual fact, all they're doing is just putting on their blinkers and ignoring the evidence.
So do most police departments across the country have policies against officers joining these kinds of organizations?
I can't speak to most. I mean, obviously, there are thousands and thousands of police departments, and I haven't seen any data or studies on that. I will say that a lot of the police departments that we talked to, because what we did, once we found this stuff out, we then sent letters outlining what we'd found in each particular case to about 150 of the departments, because obviously a lot of we dealt with both retired and active duty law enforcement officers. So for the active duty people, we sent out letters to their departments, and very often we got back letters saying or emails saying, we think this violates our policy, we're going to investigate it, we have policies against this sort of stuff, we're going to investigate it. But in some of these cases, these departments have literally like 8 employees. Mm-hmm. So having a big social media policy isn't like the biggest thing on their list of on their to-do list. But I do think it's something that departments are increasingly aware of and increasingly focusing on. And I actually spoke to a woman who, that's what she does. She goes around the country training police departments on how to draw up social media policies for their employees. So if it's not on people's radar screens, it should be, but I think it increasingly is.
Did you alert these police departments because you wanted to see what they would do about evidence that one of their members belonged to online hate groups, or did you alert them because you were really concerned that there might be a danger to the public that their officers are supposed to serve?
I think honestly, more the former. Uh-huh. I mean, in a few cases, there were a few people that I came across that I was genuinely like disturbed by and worried by. And in those cases, I think it was more the latter. I think I was, there's one police officer who was at the New York Police Department who, we found in all of these anti-woman groups and really posting like really vile stuff. I mean, he posted, for example, a gif of a woman being kicked in the head by a man, under this like other hateful meme that someone had posted. And as I looked at that, I was thinking of my family, and I was like, wow, I have 2 daughters, and I was thinking, what if this was the police officer who pulled over my daughters, and how would he treat them? How can he possibly treat them in a fair manner? I mean, this was to a certain extent a sort of a data-driven enterprise, and we wanted to hear how concerned departments were, because this is all new stuff, right?
Yeah.
And everyone has a different opinion about, like, well, if somebody's just mouthing off on Facebook, does it really mean anything? And so largely what we wanted to do was to give the stuff to the police department and say, what do you guys think? Do you guys care about this? I mean, we think you should, but do you? And that's ultimately what we were trying to figure out.
And you got a range of answers. Some departments said, we're definitely going to look into this. Some of them said, we don't want to talk to you. Some of them basically hung up on you and said, how dare you question any of our officers?
And a ton of them just ignored us. Huh. I mean, a ton of them just never got back to us. So, yeah, I mean, the most extreme example is the guy in, I think it's Cornwall on Hudson in New York, who literally like screamed at me down the phone. I mean, I found one of his police officers inside a group connected to the Oath Keepers, and he was clearly like interested in involved in the Oath Keepers, but his captain, his chief couldn't give a damn and told me as much over the phone. But then you have the other end of the spectrum where you have Harris County in Houston, Texas, who immediately upon us sending them the information, launched an internal affairs investigation, interviewed several people, investigated the guy, and actually fired the detective who'd been there for more than 20 years. So it really runs the gamut from one end of the spectrum to the other.
All right, let's go to the phones. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. First up, Adrian is on the line in Fort Worth, Texas. Hi, Adrian.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thank you for having your guest this song for all of what he's doing. Quick question, maybe three quick questions, and I'll hang up and listen. As far as the investigation you all have done and information you all have come up with, how much of it do you think has trickled over into real world as far as police brutality and, police officers who have been accused or accused or found guilty of shooting people or killing someone, unarmed, people of color, this, that, or the other? And my second question is, this information that you're sharing with Thank and Ms. Chris, is this information available for?
Thank you very much for your call, Adrian. And yes, the article is available online, Will, right? First, why don't we start by telling people where to find it?
Yeah, so you can go to revealnews.org. That's R-E-V-E-A-L news.org. And right there on the front page, you'll see a host of different. There are four different pieces that we've done. The first story looks at the overall problem. The second story deals specifically with anti-government militias. The third story looks at Islamophobia on Facebook. And then the fourth piece is actually a list of 40 of sort of the worst suspects that we found and what they did. So you can actually go and see if there is a law enforcement officer in your area. And as far as the gentleman's first question, look, I mean, I don't think you have to be really, I think, really misguided to think that there isn't a deep problem in American policing and America's and the relationship between American police and people of color, African Americans, but just minorities in general. So we didn't set out with this project to sort of say, hey, look, guys, there's a problem in American policing. Like, we know that. We came from that already. What we wanted to do was to specifically say, here are police officers that people should be concerned about and should pay attention to. Now, in some cases, they may have legitimate reasons to be inside these groups, but we think that they should be asked about that. We think they should be investigated. We think that the departments should pay close attention. And, you know, if an officer has a record of, you know, racial abuse or has, you know, been involved in multiple shootings and is also a member of sort of a couple of, you know, Confederate pride groups where there's a lot of racist stuff going on, then I would hope that the departments would take that seriously and would use that as one other reason to pay close attention to an officer's behavior.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. What do you know, Will, about the relationship between expressions of hate online, activity by either hate groups or militia groups, and actual activity in the real world?
So I go back to that wall of silence that we were talking about earlier. We do know that, for example, with the anti-government militias, I mean, you've seen a ramping up recently of activity. The Oath Keepers in particular really seem to be just kind of chomping at the bit, waiting for any opportunity they have to get into an armed confrontation with the federal government. They'll tell you that they don't. They'll tell you that they're just interested in protecting the Constitution or whatever. But it's any time that there's an opportunity for these guys to, you know, jump in their cars and drive out to you know, Portland, Oregon, or somewhere to get into a confrontation with the federal government, they're going to go do it. So there's, you know, the fact that there are so many police officers who are really interested in that movement, I think, is indicative and concerning. But as far as like to what extent police officers are carrying out sort of anti-Muslim sentiment or anti-African-American sentiment, again, I mean, going back to what I just said, we know that there's a problem in American policing. Like, there are dozens of studies that show that, you know, non-whites in America are more likely to be pulled over. When they're pulled over, they're more likely to be searched. When they're searched, they're more likely to get into altercations with police departments, which are, you know, often deadly. And so I think that this is, I think that what we're showing is just one other kind of lens on the deep problem that there is in American policing.
And the other thing that's really hard to get a handle on or a sense for is how much influence these individuals who are feeding their own hate online might influence people that they see at work, you know, folks they work with.
Yeah, and in many cases, I found multiple officers from the same department in the same groups, and there was evidence that they had sort of invited each other to the groups, or that one member had invited, you know, several people to the group. So that's definitely happening. I mean, particularly in the militia groups, there are a lot of people, you know, from the same departments in the same groups, and I think that's interesting. And yeah, I mean, unquestionably, I mean, we learn from the people around us. I mean, we learn from our colleagues, and particularly, you know, I think in police departments, you know, there's a very strong sense of both seniority and of sort of training the younger cops. So I think there's definitely influence from older cops to younger cops, and we're seeing that in these groups too.
My guest is journalist Will Carlos, who covers extremism for Reveal. We're talking about his recent reporting about police officers who belong to anti-government militias and online hate groups. Boyd, speaking this hour with journalist Will Carlos, who covers extremism from Reveal, from the Center for Investigative Reporting. We're talking about his recent series, To Protect and Slur, about the activities of police officers across the country who belong to anti-government militias and online hate groups. Will, one of the ironies here is that the FBI, the Justice Department, consider militia groups to pose a significant threat as potential instigators of domestic terrorism. You discover that some municipal police departments are trying to keep tabs on the activities of militia groups. Given the protections of the First Amendment, do federal agencies or local agencies have any power to shut down these groups before they carry out any violence or to prevent police officers from participating?
Yeah, it's such a tricky gray area when it comes to these extremist groups and what the federal government can and cannot do. Basically speaking, they will always say, we're not ever going to investigate anybody purely because of what they're saying, unless they are making specific threats to people. Mm-hmm. Now, that's, as I said, it's a gray area. And I think that, you know, we know that the federal government, for example, has investigated Muslim groups. We know that local police departments like the NYPD infiltrated and spied on Muslim groups. And I think that I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that the federal government is actively involved in monitoring both white supremacist and neo-Nazi and sort of hate groups, but also anti-government militia groups. I think, you know, it's interesting. Like, there's a lot of debate in the world that I cover. There's a lot of criticism of the Trump administration and people saying, you know, the Trump administration, it doesn't take this seriously because of the things that Donald Trump says. When he comes out and says, you know, there were many sides in Charlottesville, he's sort of sending a message that, you know, my government doesn't really care about these far right individuals. But when you actually look at what the Justice Department is doing, when you look at what the FBI is doing, there are strong signals that those federal agencies are taking the threat from the far right very seriously. And they should be, because most of the people that get killed in the United States in either mass shootings or acts of domestic terrorism, they're not being killed by, you know, Islamist terrorists. They're being killed by people who have been influenced by the alt-right and people who are white supremacists. And so I think that the federal government is actually taking these groups pretty seriously. I think that it is actually investigating them. I would not be surprised if the federal government doesn't have moles and informants inside militia groups and hate groups. I certainly hope that they do. I mean, I'm a free speech advocate as much as anybody else, but I do think that these groups have an agenda, and it's often a violent one, and I think they need to be paid very close attention to.
Well, but, you know, as a condition of my employment as a journalist, there are certain kinds of activity that I agree not to engage in because they would appear to be a compromise of my objectivity. I imagine that that may be true for you as well. Everyone understands that that's not a First Amendment violation because we don't work for the government. Is it different somehow if you work for a government agency with regard to that agency saying, if you want to work here, you can't belong to these kinds of groups?
Absolutely, it is. And this is the thing. I mean, the First Amendment does not give government employees free rein to go out and say and do whatever they want to. So there's a concept, there's a long-standing concept, both a legal concept and a moral concept in policing, that police officers need to be, you know, they need to be squeaky clean. They need to behave themselves. They need to not cast aspersions on the departments that they work for. And so a lot of departments have codified this. They've put this into their rules and regulations that, you know, you cannot bring the department into disrepute, or you shouldn't be involved in activities or speech that casts doubt on the department's ability to police the area in which it's working in a fair and unbiased manner. And so when we see, for example, the detective who was fired in Houston, the reason he was fired was exactly that. It wasn't just that he had posted racist things. It was that the racist things that he had posted cast doubt on the department that he worked for, and as such cast doubt on all of his colleagues as well as on himself. And the department didn't want people working there who were going to sour their relationship with the community that they police in that way. So there's a fallacy that there is this sort of First Amendment right for police officers, for other public employees. They actually need to be very careful about what they say, as I believe do journalists, as you made that point. Yeah.
Okay, back to the phones now. 800-933-5372 is our number. Jared is calling us from Denton, Texas. Hi, Jared.
Hi there. I just want to say I love the episode of Reveal. I heard the podcast and I thoroughly enjoy it. So a question that I had was, being an underlying motive underneath the overlap of the police officers, corrections officers, and being a part of these hate groups such as, you know, white supremacist groups. So where a possible motive of becoming a police officer, corrections officer, would be searching for a sense of power and authoritative figure, as well as these marginalized groups like immigrants, people of color, the queer community, tend to be the group in which that power is most enacted upon. And so I didn't know if in the story and development, if you talk to any psychologists, sociologists, that could maybe tie those two things together.
Thanks for calling.
I mean, I'm no sociologist, but I did spend a couple of years of my life reporting on the police department in San Diego, California. And I will say, and I want to say, that I met a lot of good, decent people who work for police departments. And I don't buy into any sort of sort of stereotyping of large groups of people. And I certainly don't buy into the stereotype that, you know, all police officers are in this to get power and that they're all nasty, racist people. And I've been accused of believing that a lot because of the work that I do and the work that I've done on this project. I think there's a lot of awfully decent people who work in police departments. Having said that, you know, becoming a police officer in America does give you a huge amount of power, including as you know, as the communities your caller mentioned know all too well, including the right to basically take away somebody's life with pretty much complete impunity. One of the things I did when I worked in San Diego was to read every single officer involved shooting report for sort of about 10 years. And when I came away from that experience with this sort of feeling of horror and dread that police officers in most parts of the United States can go out and commit murder and essentially get away with it and never be fully investigated, never be fully held accountable. And that's an enormous amount of power that we're giving these people. And that's that enormous amount of power is attractive to some people. So I think it would be naive not to think that there are police officers who are attracted to that power, who are attracted to the ability to sort of wield that power over people. And I think that there are certainly, as your caller mentioned, there are certainly similarities between that feeling of superiority and the feeling of superiority that people get by joining hate groups and by joining groups that denigrate and find themselves superior over other people in society. I think there's definitely an overlap there, but I want to stress I really don't think that it's by any means all police officers, and I certainly hope it's not the majority.
We should note here that in your work, you've also covered the radical far left. I don't know if you found officers belonging to any of those organizations in this particular investigation.
In this particular investigation, I didn't, and I haven't ever heard of that, to be honest. I think that there is, police officers tend to be conservative. I mean, they just, that's a fact. I mean, they tend to skew to the right. And I think if they're going to be involved in extremist groups, those are therefore much more likely to come from the right. I wouldn't be surprised if there are some police officers around the country who on the weekends, don black masks and go and join Antifa in their protests. I mean, that wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as prevalent and as kind of intertwined with American policing as people being members of far right groups.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. When you say prevalent, Will, I just want to press you a little bit because you confirmed like 400 officers, which is a lot and very distressing. But if you think about the number of police officers in this country, that's a tiny, tiny fraction. But your sense is that there are many more that you weren't able to confirm based on the limitations that you described earlier in trying to suss these people out.
Yeah, so let me go back to that methodology that I explained right at the beginning. I mean, we identified about 14,000 Facebook profiles that were both members of police groups and of extremist groups, right? So these are people who are, questionable. Now, we only were able to look at about 2,000 of those profiles. There's only so many Facebook profiles you can look at before you go crazy. And we had to sort of draw the line under it at some point. Inside those 2,000 or so that we looked at, we found about 400 police officers. Now, had we continued to look at all 4,000 of those profiles, I'm sure we would have found hundreds more. And again, what we're looking at was always meant to be just a sample. It was meant to be a slice of the overall. And given the right sort of technology and the ability to go and see these things, I think that that certainly you'd be able to find many, many, many more police officers who are involved in extremist activity, both on social media and in their real life policing.
All right, let's go quickly to the phones one last time. We have Manfred on the line in Dallas. Hi, Manfred.
Hi. I think the author already, the journalist, your guest already tackled on it, sort of. Wherein I'm kind of interested in comparatively demographics and the general population. About the number of if it's been done to determine the number of police officers who are into this hate groups.
Manfred, let me stop you there.
The general population,
are you trying to understand if people are more likely to belong to these groups if they're police officers than if they have some other job? Am I summing that up correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call. What do you know about that, Will?
Sorry, I'm not sure I quite understood the question. Would you mind repeating it?
If I understand Manfred correctly, he wants to know whether, for example, if you took, 20,000 dentists, would you find the same percentage of them belonging to these groups?
Yeah, that's a fair point. The simple answer is I don't know. I mean, I don't know. We don't have any good data as to how many just people in general are members of these extremist groups. It's interesting. I mean, I guess that would be interesting in terms of, well, if there are always going to be, 5% of the population or 5% of any profession is always going to be an extremist, then why are police any different? But I think there's a reason why we look to police officers, right? And it goes back to what we just said about the power that they have and the force that they have. And I think that I'm much more concerned about police officers who are members of extremist groups than, dentists or gardeners or whoever. I think these are the groups of people who are entrusted with all that power. And I think the more we can find out about what they believe and about how they behave, the better informed we are as a society.
So how many officers have lost their jobs subsequent to you sharing what you discovered with police departments across the country?
Well, again, we don't know because a lot of departments won't tell us what the outcome of their investigations were. We do know that one guy in Houston, Texas did lose his job. I believe there are like two or three who are in the final phases of losing their jobs, but we don't quite know about them yet. Basically, I have to keep on going back to these departments and in some cases filing public records requests just to find out what the status of the investigation is. I know I've certainly handed out information to probably at least a dozen departments where I'd be surprised if there isn't at least some disciplinary action taken against them. But, for example, the NYPD police officer that I found who was posting all of this, awful anti-woman stuff, he's still in his job. Mm. And the department has said they're not going to do anything about it. So we're just in a sort of a wait and see and keep going back to the departments and see if anyone else is kicked out.
Will Carlos is a journalist who covers extremism from Reveal, the Center for Investigative Reporting. He wrote his recent series To Protect and Slur with colleague Michael Corey. Will, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @KERATHINK. Use any podcast app to subscribe to the Think podcast and find out about upcoming shows at our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.